What up, everybody? You're now tuned into the true definition of a sports fanatic. I'm your host, Brandon Lampley, back today with another live stream. And man, them boys went to Duval North. That's what Pittsburgh Stadium will be known as henceforth, is Duval North, because they go there and they bring back terrible towels for lunch, man. That's going on, man. That's all it is. I cannot believe how in their feelings, not only the fans, I understand the fans being in their feelings because we're fanatics. That's what it is. We emotional just like the game can be. But the players, Deontay Johnson, y'all had the same amount of penalties as us. We had more penalty yardage, 3 turnovers, and beat you by 10. It's the refs? Is it really the refs? I mean, I'm surprised George Pickens didn't have anything to say afterwards. You know, but the defense is surely, I'm sure they let him hear it all game long, man. But Jacksonville, they show what they've showed time and time again, is that even though it still is not how they want it to look, I'm sure, but a win is a win. And now you know for sure that they can win gritty. They can win tough. They can bully the bully. Because watching that game, dude, they couldn't block Jacksonville. And Jacksonville's O-line, dude, TJ Watt and them and Ali Highsmith, they had their moments. But for the most part, that line did its job, man. So kudos all the way around. And can we please, I understand he's balling out. But Travis Etienne, I don't know, man. Is it too many touches? I don't know. But I got my co-host with me, Mr. John Reed. How you feeling today, sir?
Yeah, I'm feeling good, man. I'm hearing what you're saying about this football team, man. They could play any style, look like, can they? You know, another good thing is the tradition of the Jaguars that they don't play well in October. But, hey, they went 5-0 for the month of October, which is
saying
a whole lot when they went 0-5 last year. But, hey, man, you can preach, man. I'm very happy with this football. Me along with 100,000 other people probably, that this football team is really peaking. You know, I don't know if peaking is the word, but they're playing good football. I mean, I don't think we can praise the defense enough. I mean, I never thought they could be at this level. I mean, basically, I call them an elite level. I mean, they're one of the best in the league. And, you know, if I was a fan and if I had to watch the Pittsburgh's offense, I don't think I'd be a happy fan. But, I mean, kudos to the Jags, man. I think they took away so much. I mean, Pickens was under pressure the whole game, and they knocked him out the game. And like you say, the T.J. Watt, they neutralized him, I thought. And what more can you say about ETN? I mean, you got to put him up there. I might say, other than he's the, if he's not the top back right now, he's definitely in the top 2 or 3.
Yeah, so. I only put McCaffrey ahead of him right now, and I only put McCaffrey ahead because of the numbers. That's all. Mm-hmm. It's just the numbers. But as far as you watch them play the game, dude, ETN is the top back in this league already.
I just go back to the play. You know, the most exciting play, obviously, was spreading him out wide and like a receiver. And here's a guy wide open, and then he just beat them to the end zone, man. Yeah, you can't say enough about the execution of that play that came at the right moment. And I'm almost to the point, like, what can he not do?
Yeah.
I mean, and right now, when you look at the Jags, you know, they are, you know, the one problem is they're not getting much out of Tank Bigsby. I mean, maybe you don't have to, you know, young rookie can't hold on to the ball. We don't really need him. But, you know, if you got a guy that can carry the load and it's not impacting them, I don't see any problem with getting ETN to the carries, if it's what it means. He's not wore down to me. Don't look like, you know, it's not phasing him to a point that is hurting his production. I mean, if anything, is increasing his production. Yeah. And I like the fact, the one thing about this game, I like the fact
that you do different things. You know, this is the time you basically, you're in mid-season right now, and you want to do different, you give different looks, do different things, you know. I mean, in that formation, we hadn't seen that all year, with you putting them out there, you know, what a slot. I mean, well, he was all the way at the, I mean, he was a wide receiver to me. But, I mean, whatever it takes to win the game, whatever it takes to do, to change it up, do things different, and if it's going to work, it's going to work. So I commend them. I think these guys are one of the best team in the league. And you look at these power rankings. I do look at PFF power rankings, and I think right now they got the Jags at number 2, I believe. I think that's what it is this week. And, man, that's saying a lot. It's saying a lot for this football team, man. When you look, I mean, I even wrote down some notes, man. Say 6-2, best record since 1999. And then what we said, like, they went the whole month undefeated. They got the longest winning streak in the league. They 13-4 the last 17 games. And the one thing that you really impressed about them is, I mean, basically, they pushed the Steelers around. They beat the Steelers at their own game. And
yes, they did.
On their home field, on their turf, and they beat them in the trenches, you know, beat them physically up front, offensive line included, beat their defensive front. And the same for the defensive front, beating their offensive line. And as we've been saying, I love their team speed. They get on the corners. They set the edge. Takeaways. They went after the quarterback. And what more can you say about John? I mean, I'm gonna say what I said 2 weeks ago. You know, Trent Baalke and the rest and whoever else in the decision making. It's time to bring the Brinks truck or whatever it is. But man, to have Josh Allen, 2 sacks, mm-hmm. 9. I think he's got 9 for the year.
Yes, I mean, number 2 in the league.
Number 2 in the league. Hey, it's only going to increase. So, I mean, long story short, the longer you wait, the more money you're going to pay. So, whether you do it now, you do it off season, this upcoming spring, you're going to have to pay the man. So, I don't think it's a distraction to go on. Get whatever need to be done with extension. I feel a lot better about him signed, sealed, and delivered than the wait in the off season. And who knows, the Jags could be in the Super Bowl, and his price is going to continue to escalate. He's not going to go where he's going to have a lull he's going to be missing in action for the next 5 games. I mean, that's not going to happen. I mean, he's one of the top edge rushers or quarterback sackers or whatever you want to call it. He's up there in the league. He's going to have double-digit sacks. No question about that. You want away from that.
Yeah.
So pay the man. I want this franchise to understand there's a lot of pressure on this kid. You look that he chose not to participate in the all-season program last spring, and all the talk was, you know, that he had to come out and prove himself. And, you know, he'd been inconsistent his entire career, probably except for his rookie season. And I think he's answered everything. If you the evaluator or you the decision maker to extend him a deal, I mean, I think he's checked all the boxes. What more boxes he need to check other than you may say that it's a distraction of, you know, that a news of a mega deal, probably extension, is sort of a distraction. It wouldn't be a distraction this week, would it? If they're not playing.
No. But yeah, and you saying that, Rashawn Gary for the Packers just signed 4 years, $107 million. Now, I haven't watched Rashawn Gary a whole lot to be able to compare him to Josh Allen side by side, and which is the superior player. But from what I've seen, Josh is undoubtedly a better run defender. Like Rashawn Gary doesn't play the run well, and he has more sacks than Rashawn Gary. Like Rashawn Gary, I'm looking at his set. He has 4.5 sacks currently right now. And just over his career, he has 27 total sacks, 2, 5, 9.5, 6, 4.5. I know Josh Allen numbers beat that.
Oh, yeah. And so, he's got He's quicker. He's got different moves. He's using his hands. He's doing everything to get to the quarterback. Overpowering, getting off the edge, hitting it at angles. I mean, you name it, he's done improved every facet of his game. I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, what it is, but you know, 6-2 is 6-2. And these guys are one of the best teams in the league. But I would definitely would like to see this franchise go and lock him up, man. Cause I done seen the, you know, sometimes we wait too long. Back to Yannick, you know, I think he earned an extension the year before. It got to talks, didn't get to where it needed to get to. And then the best answer was franchise tagging it, which he didn't want. He had a spat between him and the owner's son. And I just said, I mean, you don't want things to get contentious. You know, if you earned it, then he should receive it. You know, also, too, when Doug first got hired in Jacksonville, and this is Doug and Trent, their both words were, we want to keep, we don't have enough of our homegrown players that we drafted on this roster. That was 2 years when he first got hired. Well, here's your chance. It ain't just Cam Robinson, which you did that deal to make sign him to extension. But I think you got to go on the side. I mean, it don't look good on the organization because the price, believe me, the price is going to go up. If they get to the AFC championship, it, you know, the price is going to climb because he's not, you know, he's not going to backtrack and go back to the Josh Allen of last year. I mean, he understands what the situation is because if the Jaguars don't pay him, believe me, there'll be other teams to pay him.
Yes. Yep. It's a premium on those guys. There's not enough of those guys like Josh Allen. It's not it's not enough. Don't look now, but I don't know. I'm gonna say this. Dewey and Caleb on Chaseon had good games. I just had to say it, I had to get it out there. They had good games, especially Dewey. Dewey was decent in coverage. Now I will say, you know, it is Kenny Pickett and Mitchell Trubisky. But even with that said, Dewey's been beat by worse, and he didn't get beat. He played a really good game, and man, he's always been a hell of a tackler, man. Anybody who was in his vicinity, he got his hands on them, they go into the ground. Like, that's why I was surprised that George Pickens was able to get by him and jump over both of them. I was very surprised by that. But it is George Pickens. George Pickens, hey, he can be that. But those guys played a good game. Darius Williams played a good game. Buster Brown played another great game. Trey Herndon is solid. Like, he's consistently – I think he's raised his level of play. It's a couple of guys that I think have raised their level of play, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And a lot of those guys are guys I named, because Darius Williams last year, I don't think he was as bad as, you know, I guess people try to let on because he's so good this year. You know, they kind of make it seem like, oh, he was so bad last year. He wasn't bad last year. He was solid. He wasn't this, but he was solid last year. He's raised his level of play. Aluakon has raised his level of play. No. Herndon has raised his level of play. Devin Lloyd has definitely raised his level. Josh Allen's raised his level. Even Trayvon Walker. Trayvon had a really good game, you know. So I think they're starting to put it. He's starting to put it all together, especially Trayvon Walker. I was very happy for Trayvon. I mean, you could just see that he basically forklift the tackle and pushed him into the quarterback. Like,
what a sack he got.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it hurts me to my, well, I ain't going to say that, but, you know, I've never been a great Dewey fan, but, you know, you gotta give props to what it is. And what you say, I piggyback on what you say. I think he's gotten much better over the last 2 years, particularly this year. I think he can actually cover. I don't think 2 years ago he couldn't, you know, he was a liability to be on the field and their scheme plays just to isolate him on one-on-one coverage. I can go back to that Thursday night game at Cincinnati. That's basically what they did. They made sure the tight end got on him. But that's in the past. The one thing about being a good football player, you don't rest on your laurels. You don't stay at the same level. You work your tail off from off season to the regular season. And I think that young man has really put a lot of work into becoming a much better player, a more reliable player, not being just a one-dimensional player, because he can always hit. I mean, there's no question about
he's always can hit.
He could always hit. But now, if you don't, you know, if you're missing your starter, you don't have a drop-off. And I think that really have improved in a lot of areas, and you can only give them props, and you know, that was needed. But you know, another thing I like to say about their defense, man, I don't think Mike Caldwell is getting enough praise.
I was just about to bring him up. Go ahead.
I listen to the broadcast of these games. I listen to what people say on the radio shows, and I really don't think that Mike is getting not so much attention, but just the I think he deserves kudos or praise for, I think, a lot of things what you just said. Some you name off some of these players, you know, the Trey Herndons. I mean, Adam Gosses, even Josh Allen, Trayvon picking things up, and even Chaseon. I mean, I think you gotta give a lot to the defensive coordinator, putting them in position to be successful. And I think there's not so much, you know, the one thing that defensive coordinators have, I think the biggest problem with some defensive coordinators, a lot of defensive coordinators want to show how smart they are on the football field. They got these different type of sets and, you know, you play gap control and you're stunting and you're doing all this stuff. And you know, it makes players think too much and not react enough. And I think Mike came in a year ago. I think the defensive call was a little too complicated and made guys think too much. I think he simplified. I think it always helps when you bring basically everybody back, but it also helps when you can just go out there, switch up some things or get the, you know, some different sets when it's an all out blitz and that kind of thing. But when you can simplify things where guys can really go out and react and don't have to be, you know, man, did I do this? I did this right? It's none of that. And you got to give that credit to Mike Caldwell, man, for simplifying things, getting guys better and specifying the things that they need to become better players, you know, the harping on the weaknesses, but, you know, emphasizing the strengths and also designing things so he take advantage of what they can bring to the table as far as strengths. And because, this defense, I mean, when you really look at it, man, I looked at those numbers, man. They got 18 takeaways, which lead the league. 11 of those are interceptions.
They dropped how many interceptions Sunday? Darius dropped, I think, Darius, at least one or two.
Two.
Herndon dropped one. Herndon, yeah. I mean, so they dropped at least three interceptions that I remember Sunday. So, and the ball was wet. It was slick. But they dropped at least three, so they could have more. They dropped a couple all year. I mean, for the 18 they have, they probably could easily be have at least 5 to 7 more if they catch the football. No question. And they're
always in the right position, man. Yes. One thing I have not seen, and even not so much even in that Houston game, that the worst game they played all year, but you do not see them getting beat where, you know, the guy's 15 yards downfield and there's nobody near him. You don't see plays like that. You don't see guys getting around the edge and don't see a Jaguar defender 10 yards of them. That's what we used to see. We don't see that no more.
Pickens. Pickens made a hell of a play. It's not much you can do about it in that situation. Except, tackle better. But, I mean, Pickens would have did that to a lot of corner safety combos. It's just what it is.
One more thing, man. The Pittsburgh have not learned their lesson. I can remember back in 2017, and Pittsburgh was like, basically, they said, well, we got to get ready for the Patriots. We don't have to get ready for these guys. And they talked at Noah's before that game. And here you go again. The man going to call the Pickens. I mean, going to call the defense a hope defense. I mean,
yes.
Who does that?
Yes.
Why would you want to give these guys more ammunition? I mean,
they didn't need it, and they didn't need it. They had enough. They didn't need it. The national media has made sure the Jaguars need no more gas. They don't have to go to the gas station anymore. They got premium gas. They got barrels of premium gas laying around the facility right now because the national media has done that for them. I mean, it's just what it is. Like I'm gonna give you an example of this premium gas that they've been given. I'm giving an example of it. Let me see if I could play this. You know, sometimes go, hey, why are you trying to play stuff? Okay, here we go. But yeah, just listen to this right here. This is premium gas right here.
For those of you in Jacksonville, the 15 of you that actually are legitimate football fans that don't have a passport that says England on it, which is where most of your home games should be, because that's the only way you sell out games over the last 20 years in the NFL. You got to slow your roll. Because when the guy like me comes on TV and lauds the acquisition of Calvin Ridley, I heard crickets out of Jacksonville. Yep. When I'm the guy telling you I agree with Trevor Lawrence, he might have a 5,000-yard season, I hear crickets out of Jacksonville. But you sensitive, you know what, sitting there in Jacksonville, now that you're 6-2, when all I said was, I don't think you're an elite team. What? Shut up. I mean, for the first time in forever, you have a team that got off to a good start since Mark Brunell played for you 25 years ago. And you're flexing your muscles.
Tony Baselli. Jimmy Smith.
You live in the worst NFL city in America. If the NFL had its druthers, they never would have put a team in Jacksonville. And they've been trying for years to get the cons to move that team to any other city from coast to coast. They might even move it to England and give us a legitimate global sport. So keep your mouth shut. Moving on to third football.
Yeah. You know, I don't think you need any more after hearing things like that. I mean, Craig Card, he's a character anyway. I mean, I think he's a shock jock. I'm debating on whether he was not inebriated during that entire rant because he was doing a little slurring, but maybe that's how he talked. I don't know. I don't watch him. That's a middling show. I mean, nobody is really watching the FS1 like that. I mean, you know, it is what it is. But all this is doing, what the Jaguar success is doing right now, is showing that they don't do their homework. It does because the guy sitting to the guy on the right in the middle of them with the button up on. He said that the Texans were a better outfit, that they were a better team. Yes, they lost to the Texans, but the Texans are not a better team. They're not. So, I mean, it is what it is. They don't like being called out for not doing homework.
Well, that's the thing about the national media. The national media choose not to come to Jacksonville a lot, and they choose not to watch the team, but they go on national shows and try to stay informed when they're not. So that's the problem with the national media. And one thing I would like the Jaguars to do less of, because it happened again, is stop catering to the national media. You know, you don't have to go on the Pat McAfee show or throw out a big news nugget to whoever, NFL Live or whoever that was that about the changing of the play caller and all that. You don't have to do that. I mean, no, if you're good and gracious and you want to cater to them, it's still not going to change the perception. You know, stop doing it.
No.
It's not going to change the narrative. In order for the narrative to change, this is what's going to happen. They're going to have to win a Super Bowl. And if it's that important to change the national perception, who cares? I'm almost to the point, who cares what they think? You know, I mean, I can tell you some cities in the NFL, they got nice buildings downtown, but look at the murder rates and look at the way of life. And, you know, every city in America got problems. So, you know, Little Jacksonville don't have half of the problems. I can go right up the highway to Atlanta. And there's some things I like about Jacksonville a little bit more than I would like in Atlanta. But, you know, that's their perception. It's never going to change. All they got to do is go out and win the games on the field. That's the only thing that's going to change that narrative. And we're never going to be L.A., New York, any of those cities. So, you know, it is what it is. I think we're a little bigger and better than Green Bay. I can name some cities that we better than. So, but, you know, we don't have to wear that on the sleeve. You know, we got nice weather when they freezing. And some folks who work in New York think that they're in the best place in America. But a lot of times where they come to vacation, they come south to Florida to retire.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, they do. So, and that's why when George Pickens said what he said, I'm like, why did you say that, man? You didn't need to say that. You let your play speak for itself. But Pickens says I don't like when, you know, I hear stuff like this or whatever, but sometimes it is valid and there are things to it. But one of the things about Pickens coming out was he was extremely talented. It was clear he was an NFL wide receiver, but there were character concerns. There was, and you know, not saying that necessarily is what they were talking about, but that screams me. That screams me. I mean, that's classic diva wide receiver. Me. Because in that statement, you did not once think about the team or the organization that you play for.
Yeah,
you thought about yourself. I mean, it's just what it is. But you know, he's a great player. He'll learn from it too. I mean, because you don't have to talk. I mean, after that play. And some of the almost catches that he had, I mean, we talking about a not even a half inch of blade of grass away from having a spectacular catch over Darius Williams. I mean, it's just what it is. And with a better quarterback, George Pickens would be deadly. And Pittsburgh itself if they had old Ben, not even prime Ben, if they had old Ben, who sometimes during games, you know, due to age and, you know, stuff, hits being caught up to him, and he'd be looking like he throwing the football with a suit jacket on. That Ben can take this team to the playoffs, no question about it. Because just from what I've seen, they have to show up that run game, though. They got to figure out something with that run game. But this team goes to the playoffs with old Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why they not good to talk a lot of crap when you got an offense that's that's basically been sputtering for the whole year. And I like Mike Tomlin, but, you know, offensively, this is not one of his better offensive teams, man. No matter if the quarterback come back. I know they got a weapon in George Pickens, but offensively, they leave a lot to be desired, man. And I don't know if they make the playoffs, and that might be a hard task to do. But boy, they are not talented offensively at all. And you can't run against the Jaguars. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, it is what it is. And then offensively, they still haven't put together a complete game offensively.
Yeah.
Still. And they could have easily that should have, it really should have been a 30-10 game. Not a 20-10 game, but those three turnovers, you know, they took points off the board. Those three turnovers took at least at least 9 points off the board. There's your 30 right there. At least, at the very least, took 9 points off the board. But some of those would have been touchdowns had they not turned the ball over. And I felt bad for Tank. You know, he's learning. But I think down the stretch, I think he's going to, as the season goes along, I think he'll hit his stride and he'll be better. Because when he carries the ball, like he had a carry against Pittsburgh, where the kid runs with power and he got more speed than you think. So he just got to put it all together. Trevor played a great game outside of the turnover in the red zone, which, you know, that's just that. Those are things like I was telling somebody, I said, with guys like Trevor, those are things that you do live with. You know, you have to live. There's some things you're just going to have to live with. And that's one of them. And he knows that, you know, he can't make those mistakes, but those are things that you live with. Just like with Shadur threw an interception in overtime against Stanford. He threw an interception. And I said, those are the plays that you live with him and Trevor, because they don't make those decisions often at all. You know, it's rare that they're going to make those decisions. So those are things you kind of just live with, because, you know, most times with the ball in his hands, he's going to make the right play. But outside of that interception, you know, I think he was 9 for 9, 104 yards with like a 114 rating on third down. You know, he was getting it done. And they've been struggling on third down all year. And he was getting it done.
Yeah, I can't say nothing else but to add to what you said, man. You know, I don't mind if Trevor make one mistake and you know, get it back with a touchdown on the next drive or something like that. You know, he made mistakes. Can't throw the ball in triple coverage. But, hey, man, I'll take one mistake. When he was a rookie, he would make about 10 mistakes. So if it's down to one mistake a game, hey, man, we just take it and move on. And
yes,
he'll learn from it and keep doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
Which is good. He's led his team to win 6 out of their first 8.
Yes.
And one thing I can say for sure, it's been a long time since 1999.
It's been a long time, man. It's been a long time.
Long time, man.
Yes, 5 straight wins. And I mean, and it's just me, you know, just thinking about all the rosters around the NFL. And I was thinking about the top of the, especially just, let's just say take the AFC, for example, and you talk about total rosters. We're talking about player for player going down the roster and, you know, looking at the rosters and who has, you know, the top rosters in the AFC, regardless of whatever their current record may be. And of course, Miami's up there. Baltimore's up there. Jaguars are up there. Cincinnati's up there. Buffalo's up there. Kansas City is up there. But the more I thought about it, I say, even take somewhere like Kansas City. Jacksonville has a better roster than Kansas City. Just go down the roster, player for player. Jacksonville has the superior roster. Now, the Chiefs have the best player in the game. So that's what makes it – that's why the games are so close, because the rosters – the Jags roster is superior. Chiefs have the superior player, I mean, at the most important position. So, you know, it is what it is. But Jacksonville's roster right now, you can put it up against any of those teams I just named. That's including Miami. Because I had some guys, I was like, man, Jacksonville and Miami right now. I said, I like Jacksonville against Miami right now. How fast they are, Tyreek Hill, all that. I got all that. That's good. That's cool. I got that. But I like Jacksonville in the game against Miami right now. Anybody in the AFC right now, I think right now with the way the Jaguars are playing, especially down the stretch, because we're going to find out. Everything I'm talking about, we're going to find out. Because then you got San Francisco, you got Cincinnati, you got Cleveland. You got Baltimore, you got Tennessee twice, you got Houston at their place, and you got the Panthers. So you're going to find out. We're going to find out. But I take them right now against most of any team in the AFC right now.
Yeah, and you got to also look at consistency. I mean, Miami is an explosive team, but they don't play explosive week to week. You know, you can't. You know, you got to do beyond just playing good at home in warm weather. You got to play good on the road, and you got to play good against your rivals. You know, you can't lose against your rivals in your own division. And, you know, I watched a little bit of that Kansas City game against Denver, and, hey, man, I mean, I know the quarterback
Pastor Palmer.
had the flu, but, hey, man, you got to – I'm sure that the Jaguars wouldn't go to Denver and lose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no question about it. After I see what the Eagles did to Miami, I said, oh, Jacksonville can do that.
Oh, yeah.
I said,
yeah.
Jacksonville can do that. Yeah. Yeah. And they were saying about Patrick Mahomes being sick. And I'm like this. You on the field, I don't want to hear nothing about what your limitations are because you're playing. I mean, it's just what it is. Yeah, just like Trevor. Trevor had the knee issue. He had the brace on. Once he suited up and started playing against the Saints, I didn't want to hear nothing about it limiting him or if we lost, like, oh, well, he got a bad knee and he really couldn't move. And I don't want to hear about none of that. You're on the field.
That's it. You're on the field. You chose to play. So
yeah,
it's on you to lead them to a win. If you ain't leading to the win, it's on you. If you're too sick to play, you shouldn't be out there. But
yeah,
that was a bad loss by Kansas City. You ain't supposed to lose to Denver. I don't care if your quarterback got the flu or not. You don't lose to a team that was what 1-5 or whatever they were when they played them.
Yeah, and,
couldn't score. And the offense didn't look right. So. And I agree with you, Brandon. I think Jags could play any of those teams, and 9 times out of 10, I think they could beat any of those teams. You know, the top teams, you know, of course, Miami, Buffalo, Kansas City, Cincinnati, and Baltimore. That's who we got to look at down the line. But, man, I think from what I've seen over the last, 8 weeks, I mean, our chances is just as good or better than any of those teams, you know. And, you know, I guess most people going to say, you know, AFC – You got to go through Kansas City, but I don't think this team fears Kansas City whatsoever.
I don't think so either. I don't think, especially the defense. No. I don't think the defense fears any of those guys. I don't think they fear any of them. I don't think they fear Lamar. They don't fear Josh Allen. They don't fear Patrick Mahomes. I don't think they fear Burrow. None of them. I don't think they fear any of them. I think that they've had a chip on their shoulder since last year, and they want to show everybody. You know, because the talk has been the offense. The defense has been the little brother up until this point right now. They've been the little brother. Now it's like defense leads the way, you know, and that's not a sentence that I thought I would be saying in the middle of the season in 2023. It's just what it is.
But they playing winning football, and they got guys that's doing, you know, Darius Williams. I never thought that Darius Williams would be up there in the lead and leading the lead up near the top.
Yeah, number one graded corner.
Yeah,
never thought that.
Yeah. So, and then these guys, you know, and Andre Sisco didn't play. Now, I remember when days last season, if Andre Sisco wasn't in the lineup, boy, we was in for a long game. Hell, yeah, we barely missed him, along with Tyson Campbell. Those guys been out, but not Sisco, but Campbell and been out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they ain't skipped a beat. And he's the best quarterback. So you can win with depth like what they have. That always come back to help you when the season winds into December and January.
Yeah. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. So we're going to wrap it up right there. Any last thoughts on the Jags before we move on?
No, it's just, you know, I mean, they I think they answered the bell. And, you know, as you pointed out, they got the meat of the schedule coming up. They got tougher games, but I put my chances with the Jags. I think the Jags are playing great football, and you win with defense. And I think the defense I would say they surprised everybody. I didn't think they would play this well over the first 8 weeks of the season. And I think it's possible and will happen. I don't think you're going to see a drop-off. I think they're going to get better. And I think give most of the praise. I think Mike Caldwell has done a hell of a job. And if they keep playing like this, he ought to be like the do they give a defensive coordinator of the year award? Because, man, I think he deserves it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. What up, Jonathan? Oh, let me get Pastor Palmer. What's going on? I'm going to give you a call, man. I got to give you a call. He says Super Bowl Jags. He said the Jaguars, good move. Pick O-line from walking to get home. From waking to get home, I don't know, man. You butchered that a little bit, but I'm guess you're asking is, was it a good move? Yes, it was a good move. I mean, now looking at the old offensive line now, and Now Ben Barch is gone. Now that offense, that offensive line now is, you got some depth. And I think you got some guys that are going to be able to grow with Trevor Lawrence, because Anton Harrison, that's your right tackle. He's a rookie. Brandon Scherff is most likely gone after this season. So I could see either Ezra Cleveland stepping in over there. Ezra Cleveland now is 25 years old. Luke Fortner is a second-year player. Walker Little is still a young player. And then you have Cam Robinson. So now, I mean, the offensive line is young and it can grow with Trevor. And Ezra Cleveland is a good guard. I think he's only allowed 10 pressures and one sack all year. And he's a pretty good run blocker as well. So I think you better. I mean, you needed O-line help. I mean, just what it is. O-line was probably the worst unit on the team the first couple of games. They've improved. They've made great strides over the last couple of weeks. They have. They played very well, especially against the Saints. I don't think none of the Saints, he wasn't sacked against the Saints. Yeah, they didn't have a sack on him against the Saints. So they played very, very well. And the Saints got some dogs on that defensive line. And now you just got better. And they had talks about Danielle Hunter, but ultimately, whatever the Vikings wanted, Jacksonville wasn't willing to pay. So they got Ezra Cleveland. And I was not on the Chase Young train, because Chase Young probably wants Nick Bosa money. And his health is a concern. And then Montez Sweat, you're still going to have to pay him too. But Danielle Hunter, if you were going to go after somebody, I would say Danielle Hunter was the best of the bunch. He's leading the league in sacks at 10. So, but they wanted too much for him. And any other guys, I mean, obviously there's nobody else who they really had their eyes on or really wanted outside of Danielle Hunter. And whoever teams were willing to part with.
But I will say this, Brandon. It'll be interesting to see, because I don't think they brought Esser and Cleveland in to be a backup. I think they brought him in.
No, I don't think so either.
Yes. So that means I like to know where that's going to put Walker Little at. I mean,
yeah, swing tackle. That's the first thing I thought about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a good problem. That's not a bad problem. It's just
a good problem.
It's depth, injuries, still a long season ahead. And I think they had to. And also, I like a move where you're not just making a move for now. I mean, I know now is everything, because, you know, we only, 8 weeks into the season. But I like a move. I think this move with Cleveland also solidifies that line for next season and the season beyond too, because obviously they had a problem at guard, and I don't think Walker Little played particularly bad playing guard, but, you know, hey man, you got a solid starter from the Vikings, and you don't have no more questions about that position, because the interior offensive line production has not been good, you know, and let's say what we need to say. There's nobody more important on this football team than Trevor Lawrence. And you don't want to see all that pressure coming in from the interior consistently, especially when you got the San Franciscos and the Baltimores and people like that coming up. So I thought they did a good move. And then we'll worry about Walker Little's situation. Who knows? They could put Walker Little at left tackle and have Cam come off the bench. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? I know they want to leave. I think Anton Harrison, I don't think you want to put him on the bench. Don't slow his development. Anton is having an excellent year.
He's learning on the job. He's doing fine for a rookie. And, hey, man, I give him praise for what he did in that game against Pittsburgh. I mean, he held his own against TJ.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, he did. So, but all right, man, we're going to leave it right there. And we're going to get into a little bit of NFL. We're going to stay in NFL. Got to talk about these Las Vegas Raiders, man. It's a dumpster fire. They said they fired not Lane Kiffin. They did fire Lane Kiffin. But they fired Josh McDaniels while he was trick-or-treating with his kids. Man, but I knew that. I knew that when the day they hired Josh McDaniels, I was like, this is a bad hire. It's not going to last. He's already proven that he's terrible as a head coach. He's a great offensive mind. He's a great offensive coordinator. As an OC, position coach, whether he's quarterback coach, wide receiver coach, whatever coach he's going to be, I think he excels at it, and he's very good. As far as being a head coach, that's just not him. It's not something that he's good at. And yeah. I knew that was going to happen. And once I saw the way they did Derek Carr, basically ushering him out the door, he became the scapegoat. I said, "Oh, it might be over. It might be over. It might be over for Josh McDaniels after this season." Well, he didn't even make the season, you know, because Derek Carr was not the problem. Yeah, he may be what he is or whatever, but Derek Carr was not the problem. Derek Carr's probably had the worst defense in the league since he's been a Raider. I don't think they've been one of the worst defenses in the league since he's been there. So I don't think he was the problem. But them firing the GM too, I don't think the GM hadn't even been there that long. So I think it may have been premature to fire the GM, but I guess if you're going to fire him, that was his guy or whatever, they want a clean house. But now you're paying potentially $40 to $80 million to two coaches who are no longer coaching the team. I mean, getting fired as an NFL head coach with years left on the contract, dude, you got $40 million left. I mean, if I'm Josh McDaniels, dude, I'm you won't see me no more. You won't hear from me. You won't see me at all. I'll be going, taking up every hobby I want to take up. If you want to go ice fishing in Alaska, you want to go skeet shooting somewhere out in the Rockies or something, dude, go do that. You don't even have to come back to football. I wouldn't be coming back, and at least for a little bit, you know. Yeah. But it just shows that the Raiders are now, they're in another rebuild. Now you're right back at square one. And of course, all of this is because John Gruden likes to send emails. this is part of the problem.
Yeah, the thing is about Josh, you don't want dysfunction. And that was the problem with this Raider team. Too much dysfunction. And it goes back to last year. You know, your best receiver not happy. Your best lineman not happy, Crosby. It's just, you know, and that, I think a lot of that probably, you know, like I say, we're not there. But when you got dysfunction, guys just unhappy, it probably goes back to the head coach and not communicating or not hearing things out or not respecting the leadership of the team or not listening to their concerns. A lot of times that's what causes dysfunction with a football team, when the head coach is sort of like on his own agenda, like what happened here with Urban a little bit. But it's, you know, you got to have an open line of communication. You got to put a game plan that's where the players feel that they respected enough that they're giving them a legitimate chance to put them in a winning situation. And I think those guys questioned the preparation to play calling to depth chart it was so much going on with that football franchise. It's just
Let me ask you something. I'm gonna see if you agree with this. And this is my thinking, and I was just thinking about it. It sounds like the way they did this and them doing this now, because I always dislike coaches getting fired during the season. I think that they should wait till after the season, finish out the season, especially early in the season. Now, if you late in the season, they 2-10, you know, like they did, he who shall not be named here, and we're not going nowhere, then okay, I kind of get it, but I would like the coach to finish the season and fire him on Black Monday after the Super Bowl. But the fact that they fired him and they're 3-5, you're not dead at 3-5 right now. You're not nowhere close to being dead. You are still smack dab in the middle of determining your season. You control your own destiny still. So the firing of Josh McDaniels, I think, goes beyond football a little bit. This sounds like these were things that were personal. Some of the issues, maybe issues that him and Mark Davis had, maybe didn't see eye to eye, or whatever. But I think this goes a little bit beyond football.
Well, I agree. And it probably goes, who knows, Mark Davis probably said that you need to make these changes. I suggest you, if you don't make these changes, then, you know, I don't, you know, we don't see each other. It might be best for us to make a move and make a change. And then I think the one thing about Josh McDaniels, I think that, you know, even when he was coaching Denver, and I know his time with the Patriots, I mean, I think he's a coach who's very self-assured of himself. And when a guy like him is very self-assured and you're not going to change his thinking and you're not going to force him to do this because I know this is my way. And I mean, when you get to that point where you don't compromise and you know, I'm going to stick with what I want and I'm going to stick with who I have. I mean, that's a problem, yeah, because it's not showing. I mean, like I say, now 3-5 is not a bad, it's a losing record, but it's not bad at this point. But I think it was just so much dysfunction that things are so much out of control. And then I think probably what it was, I think his communication probably cost him his job. You know, and probably the communication between him and ownership him and the GM was probably horrible. And sometimes when you're a proud person and you you done had success before and you're not going to listen to somebody else's advice for change. And that probably what cost him his job.
Yeah. No doubt about it. Now McDaniels got fired. Offensive coordinator got fired. GM got fired. They promoted Antonio Pierce. I didn't even know Antonio Pierce was on the staff. They promoted Antonio Pierce, former Giants linebacker, to interim head coach. And what up, Josh Stewart? He said, Josh say, hopefully Pierce will get a legit opportunity. Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully he will. But the Raiders could have avoided all of this. They could have avoided all of this. There were other candidates out there. There were guys you could have went and got to. And I hate to sound, you know, like I'm beating a dead horse or whatever, but you could have went and got Eric Bieniemy. Mm-hmm. Eric Bieniemy would have done a much better job than Josh McDaniels did. I think no question about it. I don't even know what Eric Bieniemy would be like as a head coach. We haven't seen it. Don't know what it would look like. I know it would look better than what Josh McDaniels put on the field because we had already seen it. He became the first non-interim head coach in the Super Bowl era to be fired twice during the season.
Yep.
By two different teams. First. I mean, come on, man. I mean, it is what it is. But I do hope that Antonio Pierce does get a legit opportunity.
Let me say this. I just hope, you know, I don't know what the cycle or the what goes into hiring coaches, but man, you cannot keep. I mean, to be honest with you, this guy probably shouldn't even. What you just said, he probably did not deserve. He didn't deserve another shot because it's proven now that it was the wrong hire. But this is the kind of stuff that's got to stop in the NFL, man. I mean, what makes you think that, he's a retread? What makes you think he didn't have success, obviously, in Denver? What makes you think that he was going to change or whatever and be a successful coach with the Raiders? I mean, what probably got him fired in Denver got him fired in with the Raiders, you know? Unyielding, dysfunction. Don't get along probably with the players he need to get along with. Too stern or whatever, without compromise. Horrible usage of players, and don't know the answers.
I mean, Josh Jacobs is one. I'm like, dude, Josh Jacobs is a stud. He should be the feature of the offense. Why is he not? And I get it. You know, you might not have had, I don't know what their options were off the top of my head other than Jimmy Garoppolo. But why Jimmy Garoppolo? We've seen that Jimmy Garoppolo. You've seen the movie. You've seen it. It wasn't going to get better. We've already seen it. And he stays hurt. That's his MO. That's what he does. He stays hurt. And you're tying yourself to Jimmy Garoppolo and moving on from Derek Carr, this cost you your job. It did.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Sometimes you're strong-willed and you make mistakes along the way and you don't want to change. And if you that gung-ho on your convictions and it don't work, then that might be grounds that you may not be the head you shouldn't be a head coach.
Yeah, absolutely. So, man, we're going to leave it right there. We'll stay in the NFL. Let's see. Oh, what Troy said. What up, Troy? Man, we got all the Jaguar icons in here. Say, if Garoppolo makes those two throws to Devontae Adams, do you think he still has the job? Because both those were touchdowns. He survives this week, and he most likely probably isn't fired. Especially if they win that game, I don't think he's fired, because then they would be, 4-4 instead of 3-5. And I think he survives, but I still don't think he make it outside of the season. I think he still would have been fired during the season at some point, because at 3-5 and 4-4, that's not much of a difference. Even with them losing that game, it's not much of a difference. So I think it goes beyond football, the reasons he got fired.
Yeah, man, I don't think him and Mark Davis got along well enough.
They probably butted heads.
If Mark is anything like his father, I'm sure he suggested interceptions going on where he came in and suggested this or what's going wrong with this, and he probably didn't like the answers he was receiving. But Josh McDaniels put himself in that situation, man. I just don't think the guy should be head coach anymore.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But we're going to move on from there. Let's see. He said, I agree. He's a career assistant. Yeah, that's what he is. He's a career assistant. He's not a head coach.
You got to do what it's
strength. If I got a quarterback needing coached, Josh McDaniels is my guy. If I need an offense to be ran, that's your dude. Head coach?
No.
Let's see. So we're going to move on. We're going to move on to the Arizona Cardinals. And we talked a little bit about this a few weeks ago. And we're just going to retouch on the story. And story where it talks about Cardinals owner Michael Bidwell. Say he exhibited sexist, racially charged behavior, former employees say. Now, in situations like this, when you're talking about allegations and what somebody's did, environments that they created, hostile or sexist, racist, or any of those things like that, you listen, because where there's smoke, there's fire, there's something to it. But you also got to think about those people who, things didn't go their way and they got fired, they maybe was promised something, they didn't deliver on a promise, and they, they may be hurt, they may be angry or something like that. And so they're doing things to try to get back at whoever it is, whatever organization it is. So, always think about things like that before you just go ahead and vilify, because everybody's pointing and saying, hey, this person did this, they did this, and they did that. Because we living in an era now where allegations is nothing. Like, anybody can say anything about anybody, and the court of public opinion is ready to crucify somebody without any hard evidence. With that being said, we're going to go over and see what he's done. Let's see. Hold on. Let me see what Troy said real quick. See, have y'all talked about Chase Young and why the Jags didn't get him, especially for a third rounder? That is next, Troy. We're going to talk about NFL trades and the deadline, and we are going to talk about that. Let's see. Josh Stewart said, yeah, other than Holmgren, Parcells, Kaufman, and B. Belichick, what other retreads have been successful? Holmgren, Kaufman, and Parcells were successful the first time around. Yeah, they were. Yeah, Josh Stewart, you left off Doug. He said, oh, I left off Doug. Okay. Oh, you're talking about Doug Peterson? No, what you talking about, Josh?
Let's see, Arizona. So yeah, a complaint against Arizona owner Arizona Cardinals owner Michael Bidwell filed in April that alleges sexist and racist behavior has come to light. Terry McDonough, the team's former vice president of player personnel, filed the complaint this year, stating the owner and the team showed gross misconduct, including discrimination and harassment, among other allegations. The complaint says Bidwell berated employees in public and caused some former employees to seek treatment for their mental health, depression, and anxiety and post-traumatic stress after working for the team. McDonald says Bidwell ripped into a black employee in a racially charged manner. The Cardinals are one of the teams against which Brian Flores and Steve Wilks, the latter whom was fired after one season as the team's head coach, had filed a class action lawsuit that alleged hiring discrimination. Despite the claim and the complaint, several of Bidwell's former employees shut down that notion. Former human resources chief Lisa Luttich told ESPN that she did not see any racism from Bidwell, and former executive vice president COO Ron Meingar said Bidwell does not have a racist bone in his body. Meingar, however, did draft a letter to Bidwell in which he stated that the owner's negativity sucks the life out of the entire process and erodes our collective resolve to work our asses off for you and this franchise. Yeah, I did see that. Well, Meingar, he was drunk driving. He got caught drunk driving, and Bidwell went off. He called a meeting and went off about him drunk driving. And he said he carried around that letter in his pocket to talk about basically the negativity of Bidwell. And so when they ask you about him, he says that Bidwell does not have a racist bone in his body. Okay, maybe he does have a racist bone in his body, but what about the other allegations? Because obviously it's something. You walking around with a resignation letter in your pocket, ready to turn it in at any time. Come on, man. That tells you what type of environment that it was. Is a Bidwell allegedly brought two pregnant women to tears as a result of his abusive and bullying mistreatment. He also is said to have told women to use separate staircases to avoid interacting with players, and he presided over discriminatory treatment of female business staff through workplace practices designed to keep them separate from men on the football side. The complaints, allegations are outlandish, and that have worked hard over the last several years to improve our culture across the board, the Cardinals said per ESPN. We have more to do. As I have said, every member of the Cardinals organization, that includes my own work to grow and improve as a leader, Bidwell said in a statement. Now, I will say about segregating the sexes in football, especially in that building. Now, not to say he was right in what he did, you know, whatever, you know, because I don't know what he did and how he did it. But I will say I do understand his point to that, because allegations, once again, hey, it's either you do that or you risk something happening or something going on. You know, ever since Me Too, guys have been careful. Men have been careful. Companies have been careful. You know, whoever it is, they've been careful. You know, so I mean, so on that right there, you know, maybe he went about it the wrong way, but those things I do kind of understand. But this is, you mean, this right here for Michael Bidwell. I think that I don't know. Now, from Meingar and what is going on, they've had some issues with guys getting caught drunk driving. And I just seen where one of their former, I don't know if he was a former employee. Oh, let me see. Is he former? Okay, yeah. I don't know. I think Bill Bidwell. So he's related to Michael Bidwell. He was just beat up by his wife and got all bloody. She beat him with a beer glass bottle. So some things going on in Arizona. It's been some issues. And I don't think that it's just nothing. It's not white noise. It's not just nothing. And this is the same. And it doesn't sound exactly like it, but this sounds similar to the situation with Dan Snyder. Now, yep. Jerry Richardson got fired for something, you know, that, well, not fired, but basically was forced to sell the team. And if any of these things are true, Michael Bidwell, I mean, you might be next up, because Jerry Richardson, he's gone. Dan Snyder, he's gone. I mean, if there's any truth to any of this, Michael Bidwell, you might be gone.
Well, my take is that I mean, it goes back to you know, the situation in Miami with the ownership there and the Flores to Snyder. I mean, I think the problem in this league is that there's not enough checks and balances when it comes to ownership. And we always hear about bad culture, but it gets to be bad when the ownership is not being held accountable. And I think this is the problem with the Cardinals. And I think it's a problem with a few more teams in the league, and one of them include the Cowboys. I just think that they have a commissioner whose job basically is to please the owners, and they know it, he knows it, and he doesn't have enough power to address those type of concerns when you have an employee make it be known that I'm working in a hostile environment, or a female feel uncomfortable with the culture, or any of that. There's not enough checks and balances, and I don't think there was enough checks and balances in Arizona with Bidwell. And you know, another thing, when you hear these stories, you know, we hear them now in the present, but a lot of times this stuff been going on for years and nothing has been said until somebody get fired. Then somebody like this situation file a defamation suit, and then in court records, stuff comes out public light. And those are the problems with the NFL. The one thing, you know, I do like the NBA, because Sarver was the coach of the Suns, and who knows what all the situation was going on in that Suns organization. But once it hits the league notice that we got to do something about it, I think the difference between the NBA and the NFL is, from the commissioner on down, then some type of action is being taken, or the players voice their displeasure a little more, where it's just not the players from the team that's having a problem with the culture and the ownership, but the outcry is, you know, radiates through the whole entire league, where you hear the big names saying, we got to do something about this, we got to do something about that. And you don't hear enough of that in the NFL, like this, the Washington situation, where it just wasn't an outcry from the whole league, from players on down to management to GMs around the league, that we got to do something about this situation. And those are the problems that the league has to address, man, because it's too many. You know, once a defamation suit come out or somebody sues, I mean, who knows how many more of these we're going to get. Well, this bad culture been going on in the organization for the last 4 or 5 years, and nothing been addressed. Everything is hitting under the rug, and we got a commissioner who silent when it comes to addressing. Did you know these problems? When did you become aware that there was a problem with the Cardinals? I mean, it's like, you know, you don't know anything until it becomes everybody in America knows it, and then he has to finally address it. I think you have to be proactive as a commissioner, man. You got to be proactive enough that, yeah, you could jeopardize your job, but your job is to protect the shield, and your job is to protect the image of this league. And protecting the image of the league is not hiding the truth or hoping something comes out that are going to hurt the league, and we got to come up with our disaster plan to push this under the rug because the season is going along. So that's what I'm my take. I just think that this is one of many that's an overall problem with the NFL that, and it, you know, pretty much perpetrated that the commissioner has to have. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they need to implement more power. I don't know what it is, but you got to have a little bit more authority to punish ownership because this stuff is true, man. I don't care if, you know, the guy might have, you know, a lot of times you see things like this where, okay, oh, well, was he a disgruntled worker or, you know, why would he go public now with it? But when you hear that from one person and then another person and then another person in the same organization, 16 people not going to say that they're all not, you know, can't come say, well, they're not telling the truth. So that's one of the things the league got to address, because we can go back to Miami ownership with Brian Flores. You can go back to allegations on Jerry Jones. I mean, and then we all know what happened with Dan Snyder, but it was too late. You know, I mean, yeah, they got, you know, yeah, the league got their wish and he sold his interests of the organization, but man, how many people suffered during the time that he was the owner of the Washington franchise? So,
yeah,
much to be desired.
Yeah. Okay, now I know what Troy was talking about. He was talking about Doug Peterson when he talked about these guys and basically being a retread. Yeah, because Doug was a retread, but Doug was successful in his first stop.
Yep.
Yeah, so. But yeah, it's and I was reading some more of this, and you talk about discrimination against females and how you basically segregated them and stopped them from talking to men on the football side. And I must say, I do get that, because it doesn't take much of anything at all for an allegation to, you know, basically somebody on the football side, now they're gone. You know, they have to be gone. Either you got to suspend them, fire them, put them on leave or whatever, and nothing might not even happen. It could just be, you know, an allegation. She could be just saying it or whatever. And then not only that, there could be a situation where a player or coach or somebody on the football side, they are, you know, a little too chummy, or they maybe have something going on with one of the ladies in the building and another lady does not like it. Mm-hmm. She will report it. I mean, that's just what it is. Those things can happen. So now how he went about it, he could have went about it in a better way, but I do understand and I do get it. And you can't turn the blind eye to it because it's happening.
Well, another thing, Brandon, you can't have one rule for the players and not a rule for the management either.
True.
I've seen that before. Where in Dallas, you know, there's one rule of players, all the, you know, hands off for players, but not hands off for ownership. It can't be like that, man. That happened with Dallas Mavericks too. I mean, you know, with their allegations that they had a couple of years ago. And then when the allegations come out, you cannot be owner and plead the fifth that you didn't know nothing was going on, which I don't believe. But, you know, you got to
believe it.
Yep. You got to nip. You can't have two rules in the same building.
Yeah. Straight down the line. So. But man, we're going to leave it right there. And we're going to talk about these trades that went down. And I think that the headline, I think, of the trades was, of course, Chase Young. I think Chase Young and Montez Sweat, I think that they were the headliners for the trade deadline. And a lot of people, they're asking, a lot of fans were upset about not getting a pass rusher at the deadline for the Jaguars. And if we're being honest, I think I'm fine. I mean, I would have liked to have gotten another pass rusher. It would be nice, but I think they're fine. I think they're fine where they are. They just got to hope no major injuries happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you don't have a ton of depth right now, but you know, it is what it is. They did make a move. They went and got Ezra Cleveland, and you got better on your offensive line. No question about it. You know, and their second, third, and fourths, I think, are tied to Calvin Ridley. So depending on his production, I guess how much he plays and what his production is. I forgot what it is that determines what the pick is. I think it's how many games he plays. But, yeah, I mean, so I mean, Balky, you know, to this point, give him his credit. I mean, just like you praising them, they 6-2. It's one of the, like I told you, it's one of the top rosters, especially in AFC. And I think it's overall better roster than the Chiefs. You know, Chiefs just have the best player in the game at quarterback. You got to give him that credit too. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. And as far as Chase Young is concerned, you were going to have to pay Chase.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to. I mean, Chase wanted Nick Bosa money. Like, yeah. There's no question about that. You know, and then Chase has issues with staying healthy. Now, Montez Sweat, you know, I know he's a good player, but you know, I don't obviously they didn't have much interest in either one of those guys. The guy they did have interest in is Danielle Hunter, because it has been reported that they were talking to the Vikings about Danielle Hunter, and they probably landed on Ezra Cleveland when the Danielle Hunter deal fell through, but Danielle Hunter was being discussed between them and the Vikings all the way up until they, I guess, traded for Ezra Cleveland.
But I'm good with it. I mean, I think they addressed the need on the offensive line. And another thing is, you're not going to bring Chase Young into Jacksonville and ask him to be a specialty player, just come in the game on third down passing situations. And you don't want to mess up your chemistry either. You know, I mean, when you look at their record, you look at their defense, you know, I think that things are going pretty well right now. you're getting a hell of a season from Josh Allen. And yeah, you know, I'm still say I would like to see more from Trevon Walker, Trayvon. I would like to see more from him. I mean, he did play a pretty good game against Pittsburgh, but you know, I think I've come to the reality that, I mean, he may not never be an elite, you know, guy to go out and get the quarterback, but there's a place for him on this team. He's a good defender. He does a lot of good things good. But do you really need a guy to put pressure on him to play better, or, you know, or take snaps away from him? I don't know if we need that right now. You know, that's something to address in the off season to see how far this team can go. But, you know, I don't think you need I might have said something different 3-4 weeks ago, but I'm impressed with this defense. I'm almost to the point to say I don't think these guys can play any better than what they're playing right now. They only had one bad game. That Houston game, they played bad. I mean, you know, they did play bad, but I like the way that they, the physical, they're physical up front. And they bring in backups, and the backups are just as physical. I mean, I think Gotsis is just as physical as anybody in this league. I mean,
Angelo Blackson, Ledbetter.
Yeah, big number there. And I don't know. I mean, I just feel that they're playing at a level that doesn't need a shot in the arm right now. If you want to really say it, I mean, I don't think they need a shot in the arm. I think they just got to continue to play at this level. And what you said, you know, avoid injuries. You know, Josh is playing the best. I mean, he's enjoying a career year.
Yeah.
He's playing better now than he did the rookie season when he had 10 sacks, you know, with Calais. But I like the team speed. I like the togetherness. I like these guys making plays. They forcing takeaways. You know, they're giving up yardage in the passing game, but they're getting a lot of takeaways to come with it with 11 interceptions. So I don't think there's nothing. I mean, at this point, there's nothing you can complain about. And even Chase, I never thought I could say this. I ain't got nothing bad to say about Chase Son over the last three games.
Boy, hey, he putting that speed. He got around the corner fast. Around the corner.
Going at, you know, he's coming in at angles now. I say, well, world, he's getting pressure on the quarterback. So, believe me, if I had something negative to say, I'll say it. Yeah, I ain't got nothing negative to say about this defense other than clap my hands and say they playing a hell of a man. They playing tough, man. I mean Pittsburgh could have been out there and had 100 possessions, and they still might not have scored no more than 6 points.
That's it. Hey, Josh Stewart say 4 years better make the Pro Bowl. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the fact that he didn't make the Pro Bowl last year after leading the league in tackles, I think what this will be, if he leads the league in tackles this year, it'll be his third straight year leading the league in tackles. Like, come on, man. Yes, he needs to be a Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
No question about it. So, let's see. Some of the other trades are significant. I really like Josh Dobbs, man. I like Josh Dobbs. And he's going to get an opportunity in Minnesota because Minnesota's 4-4. Minnesota has a really good team. You know, they started off, didn't start off well. You know, they didn't look so good, but they was just hitting their stride. And it's unfortunate that Kirk Cousins is lost for the year with an Achilles tear. But they bring in Josh Dobbs, and I would say he's capable. I think he's capable. He's capable of keeping it afloat for a little bit. I think so. You know, very smart guy. He's damn near a rocket scientist, man. He's a very smart guy. And he was much better than I thought, especially after I watched him with the Titans. He had only been there, what, like 10 days or something like that? Mm-hmm. And he played well. So, and he played well for the Cardinals, you know? So, I did like that one. Leonard Williams is somebody who I wanted Jacksonville to draft. I think that year they drafted Dante Fowler. I wanted them to draft Leonard Williams. Leonard Williams will still be here today. Had they drafted Leonard Williams. Leonard Williams is an excellent player. Seahawks got better. They went out and got Leonard Williams. Who else? Kevin Byard. Dude, the Eagles have fleeced the Titans.
Yeah.
They've gotten Kevin Byard and A.J. Brown out of them and have only gave up like a couple threes, fours, and fives, I think. I don't even think they've gotten a two out of the deal, man. Like they got they gave up Terrell Edmonds, a fifth and a sixth, for Kevin Byard, and you didn't even give up that much for A.J. Brown. So, man, I don't know, man.
I don't know what direction they're going. Just gave up one of the best safeties in the league.
Yes.
Practically for nothing.
Let's see. The Bills when they got some cornerback help after Tre'Davious White went down. They went and got Rasul Douglas from the Green Bay Packers. I think they got better. Let's see, the Lions when they got Donovan Peoples-Jones. Peoples-Jones is nice. He's a good player. So that shores up their wide receiving core. Jacksonville, of course, when they got Ezra Cleveland. And all they gave up was a sixth-round pick. I think they got better. I think you got your guard going forward. The guard won't be an issue going forward.
Yeah.
Let's see. Falcons got Kentavious Street. You know, after Grady Jarrett went down with injury, yo, he had ACL tear. And so they got better. And that was about it. But not a whole lot of headlining names. None of those names really moved the meter, except for, of course, Chase Young. But I didn't expect the NFL trade deadline is not like the NBA trade deadline. NBA trade deadline. That's a different breed right there.
Yeah.
Let's see. It's a pretty good game by Dewey the other day, and AJ even got a pick. Yeah, Antonio Johnson. It was good to see Antonio Johnson out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good to see Antonio Johnson out there. But yeah, overall, man, at 6-2, now you can rest. You get a lot of your guys back. Hopefully you can get Tyson back. You can get Zay back. Get everybody healthy, and you know. I wish San Francisco would have won and not riding a 3-game losing streak because they hungry. Hungry. They so hungry. And this is the question. Is the book out on Purdy now? I mean, is the book like out on him? It looked like the book is out on him, man. I don't know. I don't know, man. Look like the book is out on Purdy, man. You know, and I always say this. With guys like Purdy, because, he reminds me of Minshew. Guys like Minshew, with the kid Bajent, the quarterback for the Bears, who's starting in place of Justin Fields. Yeah, it's nice, You know, they look good for a time, but there's a reason why they went where they went. Mm-hmm. You never forget that. There's a reason Purdy was Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick in the draft. There's a reason for that. There's a reason Gardner Minshew went late. There's a reason Bajent was an undrafted free agent. There are reasons for that. There's a reason. And so with Brock Purdy, now looking at him the last couple of weeks, I give the Jaguars defense a chance, because the straw that stirs the drink is Christian McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. And if you can shut down Christian McCaffrey, because last time we saw Christian McCaffrey in Carolina, man, he sliced and diced us. I mean, had a career game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you say, where are you from? They picked up. Where is JK? They pick him up from where? You say JK. Where's Derrick Henry? Derrick Henry is still in Tennessee. Yeah. Derrick Henry didn't go anywhere. The Ravens, I think, was a couple teams sniffing around him, and they basically came out and said they're not trading him.
Philadelphia wanted him. The Eagles.
Philadelphia too?
Yep.
Yeah, I saw the Ravens. I didn't see Philadelphia. And I think Buffalo too. Buffalo might have been inquiring about him as well. So a couple teams inquired about him.
Yeah, they Buffalo signed Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, I did. They signed him to the practice squad, didn't they?
Yeah, he's starting out with the practice squad. No.
Yeah, you got to get in shape. Yeah. So. But any last thoughts before we get up out of here?
to see this team in a bye week. I thought the bye week came a little too late, but hey man, what do I know? I didn't think they would be 6-2 either. But all praise to the Jags, man. I think they do it. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better first half of a season. And I'm sure they got many more things down the line. The schedule, I feel, would be much tougher down this, final half stretch or whatever you want to call it, going into the November portion of the schedule. But, we're about to get off our show. But, man, I am not a James Harden guy.
Another team.
I think it's bad for the league that you got a guy who wind his way off of the franchise, and now he's gone to the Clippers. And he's home. And some people would say, well, he got what he asked for, but he didn't get the longest extent. He's probably going to have a contract for the rest of his year just from what he did with Philly to get out of there. That I don't think you can invest. I don't think any team, including the Clippers, can invest in a long-term deal with this guy for the rest of his career. He'd probably be signing 1-2 year deals. But yeah, I just think it's bad for the league. I mean, I can see you do it one time, some maybe even twice. But this guy done the same thing at Houston. He did it with the Nets, Philly, and who's to say he's not going to do it again with the Clippers? And when you got Russell Westbrook, and I don't know how that's going to work out. But
I don't know how that's going to work out either. So two ball dominant guards.
And at this point of his career, I don't think he's going to settle for being the sixth man. So I don't know what they – all I can say, Coach Lou got a lot of –
He should have been a fireman for Halloween, because you're right, that's what he's going to be doing. He's going to be putting out fires, massaging egos. It's what it's going to be, because James is going to be James. If James is going to be nothing else,
he's going to be James.
He's going to be James,
and it's just
that's going to be a problem.
More information has been leaking out about the stuff that happened last season and with the 76ers and that playoff, man. It's the story, I think, out that, he went
him and his buddy who got traded with him to the Clippers went, I think they went on a rendezvous, let's put it that way, the night before they were supposed to play that game. And it's, you know, it's amazing how stuff get out after the guy leave, but it is what it is.
just like Chase Young. All of a sudden, Chase Young is uncoachable. Doesn't play within the system.
That's amazing how all that get nipped in the bud. But once the guy leave the franchise, all the secrets get out. Yeah, he did this, he did that. But that wasn't going to work. You know, it wasn't going to work in Philly. It didn't work in Houston. And it didn't work with Brooklyn. So, you know, the odds are against it working in with the Clippers. I do like Coach Lou, though. I like Tyronn Lue. But, boy, you know, the price of winning, do you have to go, you know, the guy going back to his hometown? And we all know, I mean, I ain't going to put his business out there, but everybody know anything about the NBA know that, you know, what the man, what kind of nightlife Harden likes.
Let's see. They say with Chase Young, they say he's viewed as an undisciplined player who developed bad habits such as deviating from assignments in an effort to make splash plays. His off-field priorities and commitment to his craft were often questioned, and he was viewed internally as a player who plateaued as a rookie.
It's amazing he didn't hear that his first couple of seasons with the Washington, though. Never came out. Everything you heard was, especially his first 2 years, boy, he's, you know, he's playing up to expectations as the number one overall pick.
That's what you hear.
They also don't say is that franchise probably transitional-wise has probably been one of the worst, from coaches changes to a whole lot since 2019, 2020. It's been like a roller coaster ride in Washington, and it's still a roller coaster ride.
Josh, say any thoughts on Bob Knight? He just died.
Bob Knight. I didn't know that.
He just died at 83 years old. I mean, when you talk about old school, we talking about old school, man. Bob Knight practices can't fly today. They too soft. Hey, man, you talking about, that's like in the military now. I heard they got like little cards. When it's getting too heated, they could put up these little cards so that, you know, the sergeant, the drill sergeant, whatever, they'll stop and, you know, they stop doing whatever they're doing or whatever for their mental health and all of that. You wouldn't be able to survive a practice with Bob Knight if you faint a heart, boy. Man, listen here. But man, Bob Knight. Yeah, he's an icon, man.
Yeah, I'm old enough to know that team he had in 81 with the 76 team went unbeaten, but the 81 team with Isaiah Thomas was a great team. And, you know, there is a guy that didn't – you know, you hate to see a legacy. You know, he had a legacy in Indiana, and it didn't end the way it probably should have ended with all the things with Neil Reed and, you know, the hitting scene at the practice. But man, he had a lot of impact on basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he was rough and gruff.
Yeah.
But, you know when your coach have an impact on players when, you know, they had a whole bunch of success in the NBA and, you know, and then you see a guy like Isaiah Thomas, man, it's like, but Isaiah can talk for days about what he experienced with Bob Knight as his coach with Indiana.
Oh yeah.
Landon Williams and some other good players. I mean, Buckner and those good guys. But I can really, I don't remember much of the 76 team, but I remember that 81 team. I think they lost to North Carolina, I believe, in the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's a legend. A legend, another yes. legend is gone.
Yeah, say it is with heavy hearts that we share that Coach Bob Knight passed away at his home in Bloomington, surrounded by his family. We are grateful for all the thoughts and prayers and appreciate the continued respect for our privacy as Coach requested a private family gathering, which is being honored. You say he became the youngest coach at a Division I school in 1965 when he broke in at Army at 24 years old. Wow, he started young.
Beautiful.
He said, but he made his mark in 29 years at Indiana, including winning a school record 661 games, reaching the NCAA tournament 24 times in 29 seasons. Knight's first NCAA title came in 76 when Indiana went undefeated, a feat no team has accomplished since. I say one of the things that he said to our 1976 team, which I was fortunate enough to be a part of, was that you may never see another team like this again. Indiana Board of Trustees Chair Quinn Buckner said in a statement, well, I don't know that we will ever see another coach like him again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Scott May and Quinn Buckner, and man, that was a hell of a team to go 36-0.
Yeah,
that's you what.
Oh man, bury me upside down so the critics can kiss my ass goodbye, Bobby Knight. Yeah, man. That's that old school, man. Some of that, and then if we're gonna be honest, man, I mean, some of that is needed today. I mean, this is just, I mean, not to be too critical of the youth and how things are done today, and I don't think it's their fault. I think it's their parents' fault, and I think it's those who have brought them up fault. Too soft.
Yeah.
Too soft. You know.
It took a special player to play for Bobby, though, man. You know, I think if Bobby Knight was still coaching, then probably half of the players he recruited would be in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
But you got to give him his respect, man. He impacted. We'll be talking about Bobby Knight for the next 50, 60 years for the impact he made on college basketball and basketball in general.
Yeah. But,
he loved Indiana University. There ain't no doubt about it. That was a tough thing what happened when he lost his job there. But, you know, Krzyzewski was a protege of Bob Knight. They were at Army together.
Yeah.
So, but Bob, Bob could be tough to reporters. Bob, he didn't mind to say that's what kind of stupid, you know what question is that? But
yeah, this is. But man, we're gonna leave it right there. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Thank you for making us part of your day. Make sure you tune in again next week because we will be back with more live streams. Follow me on all of my social medias. Follow Mr. Reed on Twitter. We thank you once again. But until next time. Before we go, I got to get it popping, man. I almost forgot. Got to get it popping. See where it's at. There it is. There we go. It's so hard to say cardio, man. Yeah, but until next time, peace out, y'all.
Peace out. Happy November.